Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. So like many of you, I have trouble sleeping. I have insomnia. No matter what I tried, it wouldn't work until I met Mike Lindell and I got my very own MyPillow. It has changed my life. What makes MyPillow so different is MyPillow's patented adjustable fill. In other words, you can adjust the patented fill to your exact individual needs so you get the support you need and want to help you get to sleep faster and stay asleep longer. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-919-6090. Remember, use the promo code Hannity. When you do, Mike Lindell will give you his best offer ever. Buy one pillow and get another one absolutely free. MyPillow, made in the USA, 10-year unconditional warranty, and it has a 60-day, no-questions-asked money-back guarantee. You have nothing to lose. So it's time for you to start getting the quality of sleep that you've been wanting and we need. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity. Take advantage of Mike's special two-for-one offer. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. Yeah, I'm here. Let not your heart be troubled. 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. And so glad you could be with us. We have Judge Roy Moore coming up on the program in 1 hour from right now. His first interview that I know of, besides the statements that he has put out since these allegations have been made against him. It is fascinating to watch in this country so many people that are willing to rush to judgment and make conclusions based on a 38-year allegation. Now, I'm going to be straight up honest and truthful. I have no idea what the truth is, but I do know that any 32-year-old man that goes after a 14-year-old girl is just morally repugnant and not fit to be a senator in the United States Senate. Now, Roy Moore is vehemently denying the Washington Post report. I read it in full yesterday, went over every detail yesterday. We won't do it again now. But what they are talking about of sexual misconduct with a 15 or the 14-year-old girl when he was 32 years old. It's a 38-year, that's 38 years ago. Now, the other women we talked about, one was 16, one was 17, one was 18. One, a mother forbade her from going out. The other two, you know, I can go back to the article and give you all the specific details. We'll do that a little later on. But I think there's a lot more going on here that we all need to talk about. Before we explain in more detail these allegations, and by the way, Louis C.K., rumors running rampant about more information about him coming out. Anybody that would treat a 14-year-old girl, I can say as a father, it's reprehensible, it's disgusting. As I said yesterday and as I said last night, you know, in the case of Judge Moore, if it's true, he should not be running for the Senate and he should leave the Senate race. I think that's non-political, too. In other words, that's something I think all people that have a moral compass would understand. You know, the issue of sexual harassment is real. The issue of, you know, having to presume innocence is real, too. These are serious allegations. There are predators. There is evil. And this should all transcend politics. But it's not transcending politics. There are people in politics, people in the media, racing to judgment without all the facts in yet. And I don't know even if there will be facts, a way to positively identify what the truth is or ascertain the truth. My goal is every day to find the truth. That's my goal. Something as serious as this, I got a 16-year-old daughter. I don't want predators out there walking the streets that we walk on because this is predatory behavior. It is unacceptable. It's a crime. These are kids. These are children. Now, the one woman is alleging that to the Washington Post back in 79, I'll just give you a summation here. I read it all yesterday in detail. When she was 14 years old, had sexual encounters with then 32-year-old Roy Moore. On one occasion, the woman alleges Moore kissed her. During another, she says that Moore had taken off her top and her bottom and touched her in both areas and that he took down his pants and guided her to touch him. Although she claimed no other sexual conduct took place, no sexual intercourse, and she described the incident to the Washington Post saying, I wanted it over, I want it out, just please get this over with it, whatever it is, just get it over. The woman then says that she asked Moore to take her home, which he did. Three other allegations accuse him of misconduct while they were in their teenage years, ranging from 16 to 18 years of age. And I'll give you the specifics of it. One girl says she was 14, working as a Santa's helper at the Gadsden Mall. Moore first approached her, and when she was 16, he asked her on dates, which her mother said no to. One woman, Debbie Wesson Gibson, says she was 17 when Moore spoke to her high school civics class and asked her out on the first of several dates, and it didn't progress beyond kissing. Gloria Thacker Deason says she was 18, cheerleader, when Moore began taking her on dates that included bottles of Matus Rosé wine. She's 18, the drinking age was 19. But the woman that made the most serious charge would be this woman, Lee Korfman, who was 14. Now, she did, her mother said that she did tell her 10 years later. That was one thing that came out of this. None of, you know, in the particular case of the Washington Post, you know, Roy Moore said these allegations are completely false and a desperate political attack by the Democratic National Party and by the Washington Post. Anyway, Korfman described a story. The Washington Post writes consistently in six interviews with the Post. The Post confirmed that her mother attended a hearing at the courthouse in February of 79 through divorce records. Moore's office was down the hall of the courtroom. Now, neither Korfman or any of the woman, they say, did seek this out. Here's what we've got to ask, though. Because, look, Judge Moore says it's false. Then you have this from 38 years ago. And he put out a lot of tweets. Well, ask. I'm going to go line by line in the Washington Post article, and that's all. I'm just going to ask him. I'll let you decide. I'm going to ask every question I can think of. Because, you know, we do have, on the one hand, if somebody is a predator, you don't want them in the U.S. Senate. On the other hand, if somebody's innocent, do we want an innocent man, you know, have his reputation destroyed forever? I remember what happened in the Clarence Thomas hearings. Last minute, shocking. All this stuff comes up last minute. Herman Cain. Remember Herman Cain was doing well? 999. As soon as he got out of the race, you never heard another word about any of these allegations against Herman Cain. Now, I will say this, that there is, in so many different ways, this is a much harder issue than I think people know, because everybody should agree that we can't stand predator behavior. And that's what this would be if it's true. And as the father of a daughter who's 16, brother of sisters who I love, it's pretty scary. These allegations against Roy Moore 38 years ago. You know, and I'm going to say straight up, I think that it would absolutely be believable to me that women can be so traumatized, so it's such an evil act that people perpetrate on against them, that they don't want to talk about it. I can understand that. And I can, so in terms of the years that have passed, I can, it's long. But on the other hand, I've watched the media in this country be wrong so often. So it's like I'm giving you both sides of this. I've told you about the Richard Jewell example when I was in Atlanta Journal-Constitution. It was just before I came up to New York to start at the Fox News Channel. We had the Olympics in Atlanta. Then they had the bombing in Atlanta. Then we heard about this hero security guard. And then one day I read the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He fits the profile of the lone bomber because he lived with his mother. I was on the air. I didn't know Richard Jewell was listening at the time, but he was. He told me later. And everybody started basically convicting him in the media. Oh, he lives with his mother. No guy lives with his mother. Gave me one of the first interviews because he said I was the only one that was fair to him. A lot of money was paid out in that case. Because people rushed to judgment a lot because they were wrong. Then, of course, you know, I remember, you know, I had Richard Jewell on the show afterwards, and he since died. I don't know if you know that. I'm sure that was very, very painful for him. Anyway, you look at the Duke Lacrosse case, because I learned after Richard Jewell not to rush to judgment. It taught me such a valuable lesson for my future career. You want to know why I'm more right than wrong than the media is? Why I was right vetting Obama, they didn't do it. I was right Trump could win, they didn't. They were laughing at the idea. I was right on the Duke Lacrosse case, followed it closely. I was right, I didn't take sides in the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case, Cambridge police, Ferguson, Missouri, Baltimore. You know, look at the four high-profile cases. Obama was wrong in rushing to judgment, convicting people before we have any evidence presented. Hands up, don't shoot, never happened. In the case of the Duke lacrosse players, well, there were 88 professors. They signed their names to a paid advertisement in the school newspaper, making it sound like these guys are guilty. They were innocent. It was a shameful rush to judgment. Almost everybody smeared and slandered, and three lacrosse players, they wanted to throw them in jail. Turned out they didn't do it. How many times have I condemned people that do rush to judgment? Every single case, with from the Cambridge police, Ferguson, Missouri, Freddie Gray, Baltimore, Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman, the president weighed in, high-profile race cases. But didn't do a darn thing to help the people that are being slaughtered every week in Chicago. Like, you know, because they see things through a political prism. Some people that want to, you know, listen to the media yesterday. Let's watch a sampling of the media and how they rush to judgment.
Some of these right-wing media defenders, I don't know how they can possibly sleep at night. And I wonder if they're going to look back years from now and regret some of the things they're saying, some of the reactions to this story. These commentators, the Steve Bannons, the Sean Hannitys, they'd rather talk about the media than the alleged molestation. That's a much more convenient topic for them. But I think everybody sees through it.
That's conservative media, too, because the first conservative media outlet to sort of circle around him was Breitbart. And they said of all the allegations, the only one that would be illegal would be molesting a 14-year-old. You saw on Fox News, he had a lot of defenders. So this is going to test two things. One, sort of the depths and depravity of conservative media outlets that defend someone like Roy Moore, who is now known to be a pedophile, unless you don't believe the women who 30 years later put their names on a story that has to be reliving some of their worst moments. And two, it's going to test whether or not this toxic slogan of fake media has made people has made people immune to facts.
I would have a question that I would like to pose for all the good people, the enormous numbers of good people in Alabama, in Dothan, Alabama, Birmingham, Alabama. If a 32-year-old man came in your driveway to pick up your 14-year-old daughter, what would your reaction be?
It would shoot them. And to see in the minutes after the story broke, conservative media spokespeople get on TV and say, well, the only legal problem he has is the 14-year-old. You know, no, the problem he has is he's an animal. He's an animal, and Republicans are waiting to see if it's true.
I anticipated a fake news attack. I anticipated deny, 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 Washington Post is fake news. What I did not anticipate was watching a bunch of conservatives today bend over backwards to defend molesting a child, and yet somehow that's apparently where we are.
You guys remember Roy Moore? This guy who's constantly...
All right, by the way, I got to stop here. I don't know anybody that has done what they're saying. Now, the left has defended Bill Clinton's atrocious behavior, and we know that's true for all these years. All I'm saying is I don't rush to judgment. And that's how I end up being right, and they end up being wrong. And it's a case I'm going to prove, because they're rigidly ideological. Truth doesn't matter in the media anymore. Everything is seen through a political prism. I don't know the truth yet. I don't know. And neither do they. We have to get to the truth. Do you care about truth in the media anymore? A lot of you don't, obviously. You don't tell the truth about what conservatives say either. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. So you look at all these times, and I'm going to put this all together tonight on Hannity for you. All the times the media has been wrong, racing, rushing to judgment. Let me be very clear. I don't know what happened 38 years ago as it relates to Judge Moore. I don't know. But I'm not willing to rush to judgment. I'm willing to listen to both sides. And at some point, I think I'll have a pretty good feel which what is the truth and what's not the truth. But what you just heard as we were going to break, I'll play it in its entirety when we get back from the bottom of the hour break. That's really dangerous for people to go out there and just guilty, pedophile, pedophile, pedophile. And it's 38 years old, and it had never been brought up before. If it's true, it should come out. If it's a lie, it shouldn't. People should be held accountable when they lie. Everybody that loves their daughters and their sisters and their mothers understands that there are predators and there's darkness and there's evil all over this world. One of the reasons I couldn't believe Hillary Clinton claimed that she was the champion of women's rights, took all of that money, all of it, from countries that abuse women, just absolutely abuse them, never gave the money back. I can't believe countries that kill gays and lesbians just because of who they are. And countries that persecute Christians and persecute Jews. Now, it makes me sound like I'm the one that's the human rights advocate here, not the people on the left, because for political reasons, they're so ideological. As long as Hillary has the right opinions, they'll ignore her husband's behavior. And they'll ignore her silence on those issues. They'll ignore the money she takes from countries that abuse women. Millions and millions of dollars. Women are told in these many of these countries how to dress. They can't drive a car. Some can't vote. Marital rape is not a crime. Domestic abuse is not a crime. Women can't leave the country without a male permission. Some countries, women can't leave the house without a male relative. Gays and lesbians, you've seen it. They're hung because of who they are. Thrown off roofs because of who they are. I guess, you know, would you ever take money? Would anyone take money from those countries? I wouldn't. Country, you can't build the temple, can't build the church. That sounds like religious persecution. You know, I learned so much with the Richard Jewell case, and I learned a lot about the Duke LaCrosse case, and I watched a lot of liberals be wrong about Cambridge and about Trayvon and about Ferguson, hands up, don't shoot, and about Freddie Gray. And about Donald Trump and about Barack Obama. Media's been more wrong than right. Hey, you know how I love hearing great American success stories and sharing them all with you. Well, our favorite T-shirt, underwear, sock company, Tommy John, well, that's one of them. Now, Tom Patterson grew up in a small town in South Dakota. After college, he had a successful career. He was selling medical devices on the West Coast. But he quickly became fed up with the way his undershirt kept coming untucked. So despite having zero background in men's fashion whatsoever, Tom sketched up some designs for smarter undergarments. Now, starting out of his apartment and growing Tommy John to the globally recognized company it is today, well, he achieved, Tom did, the American dream. Now, of course, they're super soft, they're undershirts. Guess what? They never come untucked. Plus, all of Tommy John underwear is backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, guarantee, or it's free. Go to TommyJohn.com/Hannity for 20% off your first order, and Tommy will donate 5% of this month's sales from TommyJohn.com/Hannity to the Honor Foundation to empower Navy SEALs who are now transitioning to civilian life. That's TommyJohn.com/Hannity. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. Judge Roy Moore will talk about the allegations made against him in the next hour. You know, this is a separate discussion. I'm totally making a delineation here. But we're at a point where political correctness now in society is just, it's bleeding over into everything. Now, for example, I like comedy. I think Chris Rock is hilarious. I just think he's funny. He's got the energy, paces back and forth around the stage. Says a lot of jokes that if you ever said it on radio and TV, you'd be fired in 20 seconds. And I laugh. I hear jokes about Irish people. I laugh because I know they're jokes. And then you got this other whole group of people. You know, but if you're a political commentator, every single, especially a conservative, there are people that are paid to watch every minute I'm on TV, listen and record every minute I'm on radio of every single day in the hopes that I say one dumb, stupid thing that they can take out of context, that they can chop together and then use to try and attack my advertisers. Basically, they want to silence my voice. Now, we invited him, Jim Norton, with us. He's an outrageous, over-the-top comedian. And he's doing a town hall, by the way, tomorrow night. Where are you doing your town hall?
I'm doing town hall here in New York.
It's the actual venue
on 43rd Street.
All right, the actual venue. I thought you were doing like a town hall. I'm like, Jim Norton, was he running for office?
Nobody wants to hear me give political opinions in a serious way.
You know, I've known you for years, and this is the amazing thing about you. You worked for Jay Leno for how long?
I did the Tonight Show probably on and off from 2004 until Jay left. I did a bunch of segments for them, the Jay Leno Show. So I'm going to guess, 10 years.
And over the years, I've interviewed you on radio and TV a long time, right?
Sure.
And And then I'll turn you on, and I'll see you late on late night. They don't put you on the early hours of HBO. And it is the most blue, over-the-top, outrageous, explicit stand-up routine. I mean, it's almost like the dark side of Jim Norton, right?
Thank you, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Look at me. Yeah, thank you.
It is.
All right, it makes me laugh. But you can't talk like that in real life. And there are people that hate what you do.
Sure.
But we've gotten to a point, everybody can turn the dial.
If you're honest about what you do, like people who, nobody comes to see me and goes, oh, wow, I didn't expect them to use that kind of language. Like, you kind of know what I do when you come. After I've done five specials, you know, on HBO and Netflix and Epic. So people kind of know what they're in for. So people, it's like when people turn you on, they know, all right, Sean's a conservative talk. This is what he does. They come to see me, they're like, this is what Jim does. The problem is when you surprise people and they think they're coming to see you. Like if they saw me in the Tonight Show and just came to see my act, I've gotten a few walkouts. People, they're like, we wanted you to be cute and pleasant like you are on Jay's show. Yeah. And then I'm confessing the things I'm confessing.
But this is the interesting thing about you. You've been on radio and TV with just about everybody in my shows, and you've been all over cable news over the years.
Sure.
And you have a filter. You know, okay, this is where the line is on this channel. Well, I'm doing Jay Leno's show. This is where the line is on that show. When you're unfiltered and you do your show, I don't think there's any line. There's no line you won't cross in terms of making a point or humor.
No, there's not. As long as you're not defaming somebody, like the legal stuff. But, you know, I have a good filter for radio because I did regular radio for years with Opie and Anthony. And again, doing the Tonight Show, they would actually tell me I could go farther than I went. There were times where I'm like, I don't know if I should do this one or that one. And she'd go, oh, screw it. Just do it and see. If it doesn't work, we'll edit it. His executive producer. But I'm always careful. I don't want to screw up somebody else's gig with my filthy mouth.
Yeah. And you make no apologies about it. Is it just for you about the laughs, or do you want a shot? You know, I think you naturally are just a creative guy that wants people to laugh.
Sure. You want to laugh and be honest. I want to be funny and be honest. That's my responsibility. I'm not trying to change anybody's
politics.
When
you say honest, though, you mean you want to say things in life that people think that would never have the guts to say.
Or maybe they would. I just want to say things that I think or opinions I have. And you know what? I'm wrong half the time. I'm comfortable being wrong half the time. I bat 500 like most of us. Yeah. I'm not afraid to be wrong. I don't have to be right. I just have to be honest. And I think comics fall into this trap sometimes where they think our job is to educate the audience. No, it's not.
Yeah.
A lot of them are smarter than I am. My job is to attempt to be funny with my opinions. And if I'm wrong, all right, I suck. I'm wrong.
You know, all the years that I've done, like, my tours, when I first started, I started doing humor. And, look, it's my humor. I'm not you. I'm not claiming to be the funniest guy. Yeah, but I get the audience to laugh, really laugh. And I like that. There was nothing better.
It's a rush, right?
It's so great when you can make people laugh. And then sometimes, like, you get in another environment. Like, I get a paid speech to do at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I try the same jokes that I did on stage the night before when there were a bunch of drunk Republicans that they were cracking up at. And these people look at me like, really? You think that's funny?
Oh, I would love to see Sean Hannity bombing. That would be fun to watch. Well, it's uncomfortable, isn't it?
It sucks. It really sucks.
So how do you get out of it? I mean, I just go to another joke, but when you're making a speech and you bomb, how do you get out of it?
Then I go to serious.
Oh, you clear the throat? But, you know, all kidding aside.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. Is that what you call it, the clear the throat?
Yeah, when you clear the throat, like when you do a joke and it gets nothing, but you know, folks, like you meant it to be serious. Like, I'm glad you guys didn't laugh. That was a real point. Yeah, it's embarrassing.
You know, put politics aside in this sense. I don't understand why the left, they all hate Donald Trump.
They do.
There's a part of him that is funny. His tweets are funny. And I watch him, and I've known him for a couple of decades, so I know him better. And there's like a little twinkle in his eye. Oh, I know what I'll do. I'll say you have low ratings.
Yeah.
You know, or you're fake news. And he's defending himself. He's serious on the one hand. On the other hand, there's like a little kid in there that loves kind of poking the caged animal in a way, the media.
Well, you know, I think we're all like that. Like the conservatives hated Obama. We're just simply, we have a line in the sand, and anyone who thinks that compromise is weakness, so nobody compromises. So we just stand there over this invisible line and scream at each other. And when something happens like a shooting, this group takes this information from it, that group takes that information, and we just use it to bludgeon each other in the next argument. Yeah. It's silly.
What do you, What do you do in terms of, do you make fun of all of that when you're out there?
Everything. Yeah, I go after everything. I mean, obviously, I'm talking about Kevin Spacey and Weinstein and all the stuff that's been happening in the news. My own life, I talk about the president. You know, you have to talk about what's happening in politics, you have to talk about what's happening in the world.
Yeah. And that's what drives your audience. And you make, do you write or do you just, how much of it is extemporaneous just based on your experience? How much just comes, it's you unfiltered, here it goes. You plan a lot of it.
My act is planned, but when I'm working out material, I'll walk on stage at the Comedy Cellar and go, like, I want to make fun of Kevin Spacey. What do I do? And I'll just start kind of talking and working through it. So at the Comedy Cellar, when reporters, they went down there last night and they kind of chopped up a bit I did about Harvey Weinstein, and they put one of those lines like I was attributing that to Louis and I wasn't. So it's like they take these things that you're working out and they make it look like this is a serious statement he's making.
But you're going to a comedy club.
Sure.
I personally love to go to comedy clubs. I like struggling comics. You know, they have open mic night.
Yeah.
You ever see that?
Yeah, of course.
Remember Tamara Holder? Tamara Holder, really courageously, she started doing that.
She was funny too.
You know what? She was funny. And I kind of was, I said to her, you know what? I'm really proud of you because you're stepping out of your comfort zone and you're doing something that you normally wouldn't otherwise do. And a lot of people won't step out of their comfort zone.
Yeah, stand-up scares people. And it's for me, it's like acting is scarier because you're trapped in a scene. Like if I'm bombing, I can go like, oh, God, am I dying up here? But you can't do that when you're in an acting scene. So I kind of find comedy to be less pressure than other forms of entertainment.
See, I don't think this is getting any better. I think it's going to get worse. For example, anytime there's been a free speech issue, and you've known me over the years, this goes for Opie and Anthony.
Yep.
Back in the day. I've always thought Howard Stern is funny.
Yep.
If Howard Stern didn't have the humor side or was viewed as, you know, who he was, any other person would probably get fired, and he dealt with crazy program directors all of his life. I just think it's getting so confined. When Bill Maher gets in trouble, I never say he should be fired.
Right.
Back in the ABC days when he did Politically Incorrect, I hate Bill Maher. He's a jackass. I can't stand him.
You know, like Bill?
No, but I believe in you. Like him?
I like Bill because I respect the fact that he defends speech, and I respect the fact that he doesn't call people to get fired. I don't always agree with him, but I do like him. I like him.
But, you know, there's hardly anybody on the left when a conservative is under fire and a conservative is being boycotted. Liberals never speak up.
Yeah, they don't defend what they don't like, and it's kind of like, that's kind of what made them special. It's like, you're supposed to defend speech you don't like. Yeah, I agree with that. I don't like when people, we just target each other according to ideology.
Yeah, I make my living with free speech. I will never say anybody should be fired.
I mentioned you on the air this morning on my radio show.
What did you say?
Because you always stuck up for Opie and Anthony. I said, you're one of the guys that always defended speech.
Oh, and I was a Catholic after all that had happened.
Yes, and you were also a competitor.
Yeah.
You were up against Opie and Anthony. You still stuck up for them.
I did. But, you know, the other thing is, look, there's one other thing. We don't forgive people anymore.
That's right.
You know, if you say, I'm just talking about words. You know, you say something to somebody and you're like, how many hours of radio you do a day? Three?
I do three a day.
Three a day. I do three a day. 1 hour of TV. That's a lot of extemporaneous talking.
Yep.
We don't have scripts right now in front of us.
Right.
I have no idea what I'm going to ask you next. And that's what live radio is supposed to be about. And you know what? You may screw up in the course of a day. Now, thank God there's a dump button. We have seven, actually, on this program. That's a little... How many times have you dumped yourself?
You know, not on satellite. I haven't had to because, I know I can curse. And like I said, I'm not defaming people legally. So, the button is there if I ever need to. Like
how do you come on this show and not curse, considering you curse every other word in the morning?
You know, it's because we don't curse as much as you might think. And I know that I can on terrestrial. Like, I did... I'm more paranoid on terrestrial... Because all the bosses are in New York.
Right.
So in New York, you can't say anything because those creepy lawyers will start calling. So I'll go to Pittsburgh and they'll be dropping words. I'm like, can you say that? And they'll be like, yeah. So I'm actually more conservative with my language on radio than most jocks are.
What do you know about Louis C.K.?
He's always been a friend of mine. I love him. He's been a friend of mine for over 20 years. He was one of the first guys in New York to be nice to me. Since 1995 I met Louis.
Is he admitting all this?
He came out and he admitted it and he apologized and he said the allegations are true. And, it's hard to hear because I love the guy. I'm glad he's admitting it. But it's also like, look, when you're a boss and when you have a position of power over somebody, it's like it's a different dynamic than when you're on a date with somebody and she's kind of into what you're doing. You know, it's like if somebody is afraid to tell you no because there's a power dynamic, that's where it gets really creepy.
That's the thing. I look at this and a lot of these other cases and a lot of these people that have admitted it. But I do believe you can't rush to judge. If somebody says it didn't happen. Now, some people may be lying and it really did.
Sure.
But we don't give people the presumption of innocence either. I mean, how about the Duke lacrosse case? How about Herman Cain and Clarence Thomas? What about hands up, don't shoot, never happen? Right. Never, Jim Norton, never happened. The same with, look at, everyone rushed to judgment with George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin. And the same thing with Freddie Gray. And the third, Obama with Cambridge Police. People rushed to, Duke LaCrosse is a great example. Those kids were excoriated. 88 professors took out a paid advertisement in the school newspaper.
And what was his name? Kenneth Nifong or whatever? Who, yeah. The prosecutor actually yeah. stepped down due to prosecutorial misconduct.
He got in trouble in the end of this whole thing. He got in trouble.
He did, yeah. And he should have. I mean, what he did was he kind of knew that they didn't do it. And I think he believed he pushed anyway. Yeah, we do judge each other quickly like that. And a lot of times it's true and a lot of times it's not. When you have 10 or 5 different accusers, like I know Louis very well and I love him. But I read those accounts and I'm like, they sounded like they were being honest. They didn't sound like they were lying. Like, you know, sometimes you hear, like, that's BS.
I don't get the creepy part of it. What guy does that? Let me give you an example. And everyone takes this out of context when I give it. Look, I wasn't the serial dater, but I was kind of like, let's say you're at a movie and you want to put your arm around the girl. I'm going very basic here.
Yeah, yeah.
You grab her hand and she's like, pulls away. I'm so sorry. That's how I am.
Yeah, I can't comprehend what he
admitted
doing.
It. That's what I mean. Yeah.
And I can be a freak too, but that energy I don't get, like just being in front of people doing that. Like I'm a comic and I'm comfortable being visible there. But doing that in front of somebody who I'm not sure if they're into it
is
just not
mine. Are you as crazy in your real life as you are on stage?
And I'm not really that crazy. No, honestly, no.
On stage, you're insane.
But because it's the ugly side of myself talking, and I'm telling on myself, and I'm theorizing, and I'm speculating, and I'm making fun of myself, my insecurities. You know, you exaggerate a little bit, because just to tell the truth is, you know, it's a sad world. So you have to exaggerate somewhere and make fun of it.
Right.
So I am making fun of it in myself.
Because you're trying to make people laugh.
That's my goal.
Is it now to the point where it's so static, everybody's so afraid to say anything, and it's going to get worse?
No, I think you have to be able to defend what you say. Like, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, like, they chopped up, they like I said, they screwed up in this article today.
This happened to me yesterday, too.
They take it out of context. The good news is that, you know, if it's just words, a lot of times the news passes and people lose interest in it. Yeah. But if you can defend what you say and go, hey, this is what I meant and this is why I said it, reasonable people will usually listen to you.
All right, so you're going to be at Town Hall tomorrow.
Saturday, 9:45.
What street is that on?
That's on 43rd Street.
43rd Street in New York. Don't go and bring the kids. You can bring the kids to my movie, but they can't go to your show.
Yeah, they probably should not come to my show unless they're 18 or over and really creepy kids.
If you're playing tonight, I'd go. I'd go right after my TV
show. I'd love
show.
To have you come. Come tomorrow. Come into the city.
I hate coming. You know, I might because a friend of mine's in the hospital. Actually, I have to go see him.
Yeah, bring him. Cheer him up or make him feel worse, whatever will happen.
All right, Jim Norton, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy. Good seeing you,
so
Sean.
Much. Good seeing you again.
Appreciate it.
All right, when we come back, exclusive interview, Judge Roy Moore will respond to the Washington Post, and we have a lot of questions we're going to ask him. We have a lot more coming up in the course of the program today. Kellyanne Conway is going to stop by in the next hour. Also, Mercedes Cohen and D.C. McAllister will stop by. We'll go over all of the implications and all of the talk about, okay, how does the media get things wrong so often? What is it about the obsession to rush to judgment? Why do people constantly in the media get it wrong? Why do we get it right? Well, I explained why. I explained I learned lessons, and I learned a valuable lesson. You know, I've said yesterday, I haven't said it yet today, you know, there's 10 commandments, that 10 big ones. You know, thou shalt not kill, I'm the Lord thy God, there should be no false gods before me. It's 10 big ones that you get. Although it was broken down to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. We know the 9 commandments are absolutely broken all the time. Why is bearing false witness against a neighbor so wrong? Now, does that mean I think Judge Moore is innocent? I don't know. I wasn't there 38 years ago. Nor does anybody else that is convicting him. You gotta wait for truth, facts, information. Then you decide. All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Now, we've spent a lot of the last day talking about these allegations about Senate candidate down in Alabama, Judge Roy Moore. And this relates to a Washington Post piece that we read all the details, but I'll remind you what it says. Now, the allegations come from 38 years ago. Now, a woman... The headline of the Washington Post, woman says Roy Moore initiated a sexual encounter when she was 14 and he was 32. Now, I want to explain this in all of its detail, and then Judge Moore is going to respond to all of this exclusively here on the program today. And I said this yesterday, if anyone behaves this way or is responsible for this type of behavior, of course, it is unacceptable in society. It would be shameful, etc. Everyone would agree a 32-year-old man pursuing a 14-year-old girl is despicable. And that's something that I think should transcend all politics. Roy Moore has, however, been in the public eye for 40 years, a controversial figure for many of those years. Does everybody in this country have a presumption of innocence and a right to defend their name? One of the things I've said on radio and TV is our goal, this is not a political issue. This is a goal to get to the truth. In light of all of these people that we have mentioned, from Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey and Ben Affleck and Dustin Hoffman, and the list goes on and on and on. It is revealed Roman Polanski is hailed as a hero by Hollywood. So my goal is only to find the truth. This isn't political for me in any way, shape, manner, or form. So the Washington Post alleges that back in 1979, when she was 14 years old, that she had sexual encounters with the then 32-year-old Roy Moore. And on one occasion, the woman alleges that Moore kissed her. And during another, she says that Moore allegedly inappropriately touched her and asked her to, and he took off her shirt and pants and then guided her hand to touch him. Although she claimed no other sexual conduct had taken place, no sexual intercourse, she described the incident to the Washington Post as stating, "I wanted it over with. I want it out. Please just get this over with. Whatever it is, just get it over with." Then the woman says she asked Moore to take her home, which he did. And you have three other women also accusing Moore of misconduct back in the 70s while they were teenagers, ranging in age from 16 to 18 years old. The age of consent in Alabama is 16. The women are alleging that Moore pursued romantic relationships with them, and one allegation involved kissing and only kissing. And we'll go into all the details of all this in a second, but joining us now is the Alabama Senate candidate, Judge Roy Moore. Judge, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Nice to be with you.
Yeah. Judge, let's talk about, first, you're now reading it. I know you put out a number of statements, but I think we should address it head on. What do you make of these allegations?
Well, Sean, first let me say this. These allegations are completely false and misleading. But more than that, it hurts me personally because, you know, I'm a father. I have one daughter. I have five granddaughters, and I have a special concern for protection of young ladies. This is really hard to get on radio and explain this, and as these allegations are just completely false.
What do you make specifically? Let's start with what they talked about, that you had struck up a conversation with this young woman who was 14, Lee Kaufman, and her mother says that you offered to watch the girl while the mother went inside for a custody hearing, which they confirmed it actually happened at that time. Do you know Ms. Kaufman? Do you know the mother?
I don't know Ms. Kaufman from anybody. I've never talked to her, never had any contact with her. Allegations of sexual misconduct with her are completely false. I believe they're politically motivated. I believe they're brought only to stop a very successful campaign, and that's what they're doing. I've never known this woman or anything with regard to the other girls. You understand this is 40 years ago, and after my return from the military, I dated a lot of young ladies. I do recognize, however, the names of two of these young ladies, Debbie Wesson and Gloria Thacker, which they have a maiden, that's their maiden name.
Well, let me just give the details. Debbie Wesson Gibson says she was 17 when you spoke to her high school civics class and asked her out on several dates, and it did not progress, her words, beyond kissing, according to the Washington Post. Let's stay on her. Did that happen?
I do not remember speaking to a civics class. I don't remember that. I do not remember when we – I seem to remember knowing her parents, that they were friends. I can't recall specific dates because that's been 40 years, but I remember her as a good girl. But neither of them have ever stated any inappropriate behavior. She didn't say anything that they.
Well, she said, but do you remember ever going on a date with her? She said that you asked her out on the first of several dates, but nothing progressed beyond kissing.
I don't remember specific dates. No, I do not. And I don't remember if it was that time or later, but I do not remember that. No.
But you know her, but you never dated her ever. Is that what you're saying?
Know her, but I don't remember going out on dates. I knew her as a friend. If we did go out on dates, then we did, but I do not remember that.
What about Gloria Thacker Deason? Says she was an 18-year-old cheerleader when you began taking her on dates that included bottles of Matus Rosé wine. She's 18 at the time. The Alabama drinking age at the time is 19. Did that ever happen?
No, because in this county, it's a dry county. We never would have had liquor if I would never. And believe this, she said that she believed she was underage. And she, as I recall, she was 19 or older. And that just never happened. I never provided alcohol, beer, or intoxicating liquors to a minor. That would be against the law, against anything I would have ever done. And I seem to remember her as a good girl. I seem to remember that I had some sort of knowledge of her parents or mother, very in particular.
At that time in your life, let me ask you this. You do remember these girls. Would it be unusual for you as a 32-year-old guy to have dated a woman as young as 17? That would be a, 15-year difference, or a girl 18. Do you remember dating girls that young at that time?
Not generally, no. If I did, I'm not going to dispute anything, but I don't remember anything like that.
But you don't specifically remember having any girlfriend that was in her late teens even at that time?
No, I don't remember that, and I don't remember ever dating any girl without the permission of her mother. And I think in her statement, she said that her mother actually encouraged her to go out with me.
Well, actually, there was one, a 14-year-old that was working as a Santa helper when you approached her, and when she was 16, and her mother forbade her. That was the third case. Let me go back to Korfman for a minute here, because this is the issue here. She gives specific instances where the first day you met her at the courthouse, you got her phone number, you talked to her on the phone. And on that, you drove her 30 minutes from her house to the woods and where you lived, and you kissed her. And on a second visit, you took off her shirt, pants, removed your clothes, touched her bra, underpants, and you guided her hand to touch him over your underwear. Now, those are specific charges she's making. And I think, obviously it's about a month away from this election campaign.
Yeah.
Are you staying? Is it your position? None of that ever happened.
It never happened, and I don't even like hearing it because it never happened. And they're doing this a month away, 4 weeks away, after 40 years in public service. I've run five campaigns, statewide campaigns, three in the county. This has never been brought up. It has never been even mentioned. And all of a sudden, 4 weeks out, they're bringing it up. They're bringing it up because it's political. It's a direct attack on this campaign. And it involves a 14-year-old girl, which I would have never had any contact with, nothing with her mother or in a courthouse or anywhere else would I have done that. In fact, her allegations contradict the whole behavior pattern that the two of the young ladies even witnessed herself.
You mentioned you'd never go out with any young girl. I assume you meant like when you were 32 at that time of your life, would you always ask the permission of the parent before you would take a girl out?
Well, I mean, I'm saying that in their statements that they made, these two young girls said their mothers actually encouraged them to be friends with me. And, that's what they said. I don't remember. I wasn't privy to their conversation, but obviously we never had any sexual activity. There was never anything like that, and the behavior was all together appropriate, according to them.
I got to take a break. We'll come back more with Judge Roy Moore exclusively here on the Sean Hannity Show. All right, as we continue, Judge Roy Moore responding to the Washington Post in the headline, woman says Roy Moore initiated sexual encounter when she was 14 and he was 32. I guess the most important part of this is You have pretty much been convicted in the court of public opinion. I mean, I'm looking at, there are Republican senators, you know, like John McCain is out there and he's very vocal. And he's been out there saying that from his position that whether you're, he said the allegations against Roy Moore are deeply disturbing and disqualifying. He should immediately step aside and allow the people of Alabama to elect a candidate they can be proud of. And Mitt Romney said, you're innocent until proven guilty is only for criminal convictions, not elections, he goes on to say, and seemingly suggesting just because of the allegation you should step aside. How do you respond to them?
Well, if you step aside against for any allegation, then you might as well not run, because when you run, you're going to get allegations. And first, I would tell these individuals, they wouldn't make good judges, they wouldn't make good people in the judicial system, because you are innocent until proven guilty. In this case, this woman has waited over 40 years to bring a complaint. 4 weeks out of an election, it's obvious to the casual observer that something's up. We're also doing an investigation, and we have some evidence of some collusion here, but we're not ready to put that to the public just yet.
So you are trying to prove your innocence, in other words.
Well, just like you said, they're doing it to defeat the Senate campaign. They're bringing something. They're trying to mix something up from other girls that never said anything about sexual impropriety, and they're all labeling it on this 14-year-old, and I had nothing to do with this. This is a completely manufactured story meant to defraud this campaign. And they're losing. They're 11 points behind. They don't like my acknowledgement that there is a God and that we've refused to debate them because of their very liberal stance on transgenderism and transgenderism in the military and in bathrooms. They're desperate. Sean, they're simply
Well,
desperate.
Let me ask a general question.
Let's
take you out of this for a second. If any Senate candidate who was 32 at the time had done this to a 14-year-old girl, to me, it's disgusting. To me, it would be despicable. Yeah. To me, that is a predator. Would you agree with me? No such person who ever does that should ever be in the United States Senate?
Of course. Nobody that abuses a 14-year-old age 32 or age 17, it doesn't matter. If you abuse a 14-year-old, you shouldn't be a Senate candidate. I agree with that. But I did not do that.
Let's go back to it. One more question, because I didn't understand this. If you're 32 and you do date, again, this is different, 17 or 18-year-old, that's a pretty big gap for a pretty young girl. Is that something you did when you were dating? I'm not talking about the 14-year-old and that specific allegation. Would it be normal behavior back in those days for you to date a girl that's 17 or 18?
No, not normal.
If my daughter is 17, my daughter's 16 years old. If she's 17 or 18, I don't want her dating a 32-year-old.
I wouldn't either.
And you can say unequivocally you never dated anybody that was in their late teens like that when you were 32?
It would have been out of my customary behavior. That's right.
In other words, you don't recall ever dating any girl that young when you were that old?
I've said no.
And you think that's inappropriate, too. That's what you're saying.
Inappropriate, yes.
Let me ask you about your general feelings, because, you know, a lot of things come up during elections. This is not my first rodeo, Judge, and I've covered a lot of big topics over the years, and I know a lot of people rush to judgment, and in my life, I try not to do that. And this is such a serious allegation. It's such a significant point in this race. My only goal is not ideological here. My goal is to get to truth. And, you know, Richard Jewell, I was in Atlanta, and then the article comes out, well, he fits the profile of the lone bomber because he lives with his mother. We saw what happened in the Duke lacrosse case. Those three kids were falsely accused. We saw that the whole nation and the president was wrong on issues like Ferguson, Missouri, hands up, don't shoot, never happened. George Zimmerman was found not guilty by a jury of his peers. Darren Wilson was exonerated by a grand jury because of eyewitnesses that saw the Michael Brown incident. Then you have the case of Freddie Gray. Everybody thought those policemen did horrible things, and they were all not guilty. There was no evidence on any of those cases. So there are instances when things are said wrong. Clarence Thomas, I would argue, is a case. Herman Cain is a case. I got to take a break. We'll come back more with Judge Roy Moore exclusively here on the Sean Hannity Show. All right, as we continue, Judge Roy Moore responding to the Washington Post in the headline, woman says Roy Moore initiated sexual encounter when she was 14 and he was 32. So I guess, you know, you've got yourself in a position here where you're a month out of an election. This all drops on you. You're denying everything. What do you want to tell people? And I'll just give you the microphone about how they should view the Washington Post, these people making these charges, and your denial. How should people see it?
Well, I think they should see it as it really is, and that 40 years I've been in the public eye. I've been serving as a deputy prosecutor. I've been a judge. I've been a chief justice twice. I've run a foundation for moral law. And now, after 40 years, 4 weeks out of an election, not even mentioned in the primary, they bring charges and try to back them up with other things that sound bad, but then they allege things that are completely untrue. I never knew this woman. I never met this woman. And these charges are politically motivated, and they're there to do exactly what they're doing. The Democrat is 11 points behind. He's very liberal. They don't want to talk about his record. They don't want to talk about his inexperience. They want to defuse this just like they defused President Trump's agenda by bringing up the Russian deal. They're bringing up something to track from this campaign, and they know what they're doing, and they've got me obviously on the radio hearing things about a sexual encounter that never happened. I would put you in the same position. You would feel just like me. You'd be angry. You'd be very angry. And that's exactly the position I'm in. This never happened. They know it never happened. And obviously, you don't wait 40 years to bring up something like this. There are going to come out facts. There will be facts to show in this situation that this was a Democrat and maybe even the established Republican effort to undermine this campaign because they don't want to hear the truth in Washington and they don't want to hear the truth about God and about the Constitution.
Last thought on the establishment Republicans. You think they're partly involved in this?
Well, if they're not involved in the implementation of it, they're sure backing away very quickly.
And then what about those that don't give you the presumption of innocence? What do you say to them?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. They're not even giving me the presumption of innocence. They're saying I should resign because the Washington Post, who brought these charges against the president, or allegations about the Russian involvement, the Washington Post has attacked my foundation. They've attacked my wife. And now they're attacking me personally on a sexual matter. I don't know what's coming next, but I'm sure that in the next 4 weeks, they're going to come out with another article because they've got an agenda and they're fulfilling their agenda right as we speak.
Judge Moore, thank you for taking the time, and we appreciate you giving your side. We believe in being fair and balanced, and thank you so much for talking to our audience, answering these questions. We appreciate it. Wish you the best. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
All right, joining us now, Kellyanne Conway, counselor to the president. Kellyanne, always great to talk to you. How are you?
I'm great, Sean. How are you today?
You know, I wanted you to come on the program, not to address all these other issues. I don't want to drag you into that. I want to ask you specifically, I'm watching a president that is working his way through Asia, gave an incredible speech 30 miles from the demilitarized zone in South Korea, had a position of peace through strength, stern warnings to Kim Jong-un, North Korea,
yes.
Seems to have hit it off fabulously with the president of China. And it seems like, you know, for a president that has accomplished everything he could do on his own as he waits for Congress. Now he's I wonder now if maybe his greatest legacy won't be his ability to get this thing straightened out in North Korea, which is extraordinarily dangerous and complicated.
And Sean, I believe on this particular trip, the president has continued the efforts and the entreaties he's made through the first 10 months of his administration. He was talking to Abe and she and others starting last fall after he won during transition. And so he's building on that I think what this trip also did was it told the international community that North Korea is not a problem and menace unique to the United States. It is a problem for the world. And he is calling upon them, particularly China and Korea, certainly, and Japan, to join him and Russia if they like to come on board. I mean, this North Korea, a nuclearized North Korea, is everybody's business. And it's taken the leadership of Donald Trump as president to bring others to the table and to get them serious about this. North Korea didn't become a problem overnight. But what happened practically overnight is a new leader, a new commander-in-chief, somebody who puts America's interests first and is engaging the rest of the international community to come on board and to help on these big, big issues.
You know, at the end of the day, I remember when the president met the first time with the leader of China. I mean, it was pretty stunning that, you know, every meeting was supposed to be scheduled for, 30 minutes, and they all went an hour and a half, 2 hours and longer.
Well, that's the real joke of the way this president is covered sometimes by, you know,
you mean by, like, fake news, those people?
Well, that's always just looking for the negative. And when you think about him wanting to sit down and engage a world leader for far more than whatever, you know, time that has been allotted on some schedule, that doesn't even matter. What matters is what they're discussing, how deeply they're engaging. And I've always told the president every time he returns from one of these trips that was a success, and he once said to me, how do you know that? I said, because practically the time, as soon as you touch down at Andrews Air Force Base and you return, the media stopped covering the trip. That's how you know it's a success. But we should really unpack for weeks now everything that has happened on these four or five foreign trips he's taken this year. They've been historic. Let's go back to May when he started out in Saudi Arabia and Israel and the Vatican, and then he went to the G7. He went to, I mean, it's just unbelievable all the things he's done. And I think for those who are preparing their one-year anniversaries of his presidency, they want to talk about Russia. They ought to be talking about all the country's leaders he's engaged, all the bilateral meetings he's hosted here at the White House, and all the trips he's taken, and everything that's come of that. The other thing you can't deny, and this is where I love the fact that the democratization of information, whether it's the president's tweets or whether it's the internet, people can, with a point and a click, Sean, they can see exactly the way this president is performing and behaving overseas and dialoguing overseas and exactly how he's being received. Every nation has put out the red carpet treatment for him with a great deal of respect and a great deal of engagement and enthusiasm. You see the people lining the streets. You see the heads of state. You see unprecedented shows of support and enthusiasm and curiosity for this president. And he's not always treated that way here at home by those who are in charge of covering him. So there's a contrast as well.
Well, Kellyanne, I really appreciate you being with us. I think you're right on a lot of fronts. Let's talk about the Senate and how the Senate now is talking about implementing the Senate tax cut, the corporate tax cuts in 2019, not 18. To me, that is a prescription that Republicans will get slaughtered in the midterms a year from now.
Well, we respect the process, and we're very glad that the House and Senate have already begun the process, because this president has been saying for 1 year since he was elected, Sean, that cutting taxes for the middle class and reducing the corporate income tax from the highest in the developed world at 35% to somewhere below the 23% average at about 20%. You remember, this president wanted an immediate and permanent corporate tax cut all the way down to 15%, because he understands firsthand, as a very successful businessman, that if you reduce the corporate tax rate on our job creators, you are spurring economic growth, you're unleashing prosperity. They protect the jobs they've already created, and they create more jobs. They give a wage raise to their workers. They improve the benefits packages, and it just makes them more competitive. So we very much urge those legislators to take a serious look at having an immediate and a permanent corporate tax cut, because we know that they're way overdue. This will go to reconciliation. That's the process. We hope it'll be bipartisan. We can't imagine how some of these Democrats are going to be able to return home to their congressional district and indeed their state among the U.S. senators, Sean, and say, hey, when I had an opportunity to cut your taxes, I didn't do it. I looked the other way because of petty partisan political reasons. This should be a dramatic, robust, historic tax cut, and a lot of that should take hold immediately. So we see the Senate and the House have different versions on a number of different items. The president has made clear unequivocally what his major principles are. He will not sign something into law that does not adhere to the major principle of being a middle-class tax cut. And we're very glad that they're, I don't know, on this one, everybody seems to be running a little bit more at Trump speed than at swamp speed.
Well, I got to tell you right now that this is really amazing that, you know, we even have the possibility that they can't get it done by the end of this year, and then they'd push off the economic growth. Look, Kellyanne, I was out on the campaign trail. I was on TV and radio every day talking about this being the forgotten man and woman election. I kept talking about how many people in poverty on food stamps, out of the labor force, worse recovery, doubling the debt. You know, what was missing for me here is, and I know the Senate version, they do cut the top rate to 35%. I'm having a hard time understanding why in the House they're abandoning supply-side conservative Reaganomics, and that is tax cuts across the board so that you know, the economy gets spurred even further.
Sure. And, you know, to your point, Sean, the tax cuts is a piece, a major component, but one component of the president's overall economic agenda for prosperity and security, and it's working. His deregulation is truly unprecedented. The goal was two regulations out for every new one in. We're way ahead of schedule on that. And he also has unleashed energy independence. He is renegotiating these imbalanced trade deals that really screw the American worker and American prosperity. And this is, so the tax cuts is the centerpiece of that, but it's one piece. And look, the stock market's already responding. 54 record highs as of yesterday. Consumer confidence at a 17-year high. Unemployment at a 17-year low. Those are the numbers that matter to the American people and to American job creators. But remember, that's also with the anticipation and expectation that this will be a significant and consequential middle-class tax cut, and that we'll also have tax simplification. We waste billions of hours and billions of dollars a year on complying with a tax code that's longer than the Bible.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's so corrupt. And, you know, when you have all the best economic accounting minds in the country given the same information, asked to calculate what the specific tax payment would be, they never come to the same answer. That shows you how complicated it is. I do like the idea of having the postcard. It just seems that they don't have, there's no harmony between the House and Senate. I mean, the House does pass the health care bill. The Senate doesn't. There's 300 bills passed by the House. The Senate does nothing. They haven't even confirmed all the appointments of the president. Even good laws like Kate's Law and, you know, laws on immigration and all sorts of one bill after another. Why can't they get this done? The American people see Republicans taking vacation after vacation, and they're getting frustrated.
Well, my message is always that people should tell their senators and their members of Congress, you ought to at least work as hard as I do. That's all we're asking for, is work as hard as we the people work. Stay on the job as long, get it done, and show production. I mean, that's really the difference between Donald Trump as president and most people who are in elective office, Sean, particularly those who've been in elective office a very long time, is that when you are a builder, at the end of your process, there is a product. It's the building. You can't just talk about it and have a commission and a task force about it and mark it up. You actually have to build it. And there is production and delivery at the end. Washington really is not used to that. It's a city that talks a lot and acts a little. And I just want to remind the Republicans, this country entrusted in you the opportunity to get rid of the excuse of divided government, bury that once and for all, and to actually get things done. And I think if they perform thusly, I've been on Capitol Hill all week. I've been doing briefings in the House, the Senate. I had a press conference with 11 senators, to the chiefs of staff in the Senate yesterday, the House members. And my message to them is very simple. You look at the publicly available polling data, and it shows that specifics drive support. The more information you give people about the tax plan, about the president and the Congress's tax vision, the more they like it. It's when it's a battle of the sound bites that we lose. So we can't have something as fundamental and consequential as tax cuts be left on the altar of clever sound bites and some pundits on TV who don't know anything about economics telling us what's in it, what's not in it. People need to go and get that information for themselves. It's posted in both of the bills. There's polling data from CBS News, from Politico, from America's First Priorities, from Reuters and Ipsos. We covered it all. I just wanted to point out something that your listeners will really enjoy. In the CBS News poll, the latest one, they referred to him as Donald Trump. They never used the word president, Sean. Is that amazing? Donald Trump.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
It's a subtle little things I want people to always look for.
All right, Kellyanne Conway, counsel to the president. Kellyanne, thank you. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, 800-941-SEAN, on this busy breaking news day. We'll continue. All right, when we come back, Mercedes Cohen, legal analyst, Fox News Channel, also has dealt with hundreds of sexual harassment-like legal cases in her career. We'll get her to weigh in. D.C. McAllister joins us. And then we have a very special something happening that I can't tell you about. Facebook Live edition of Hannity. And there's a reason. That's at 5:35 Eastern Time. All right, 2:35 on the West Coast. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue. What do you want to tell people, and I'll just give you the microphone, about how they should view the Washington Post, these people making these charges, and your denial? How should people see it?
Well, I think they should see it as it really is, and that's 40 years I've been in the public eye. I've been serving as a deputy prosecutor. I've been a judge. I've been a chief justice twice. I've run a foundation for moral law. And now, after 40 years, 4 weeks out of an election, not even mentioned in the primary, they bring charges and try to back them up with other things that sound bad. But then they allege things that are completely untrue. I never knew this woman. I never met this woman. And these charges are politically motivated, and they're there to do exactly what they're doing. The Democrat is 11 points behind. He's very liberal. They don't want to talk about his record. They don't want to talk about his inexperience. They want to defuse this just like they defused President Trump's agenda by bringing up the Russian deal. They're bringing up something to track from this campaign. And they know what they're doing, and they've got me, obviously, on the radio hearing things about a sexual encounter that never happened. I would put you in the same position. You would feel just like me. You'd be angry. You'd be very angry. And that's exactly the position I'm in. This never happened. They know it never happened. And obviously, you don't wait 40 years to bring up something like this. There are going to come out facts. There will be facts to show in this situation that this was a Democrat and maybe even the established Republican effort to undermine this campaign because they don't want to hear the truth in Washington and they don't want to hear the truth about God and about the Constitution.
Some of these right-wing media defenders, I don't know how they can possibly sleep at night. And I wonder if they're going to look back years from now and regret some of the things they're saying, some of the reactions to this story. These commentators, the Steve Bannons, the Sean Hannitys, they'd rather talk about the media than the alleged molestation. That's a much more convenient topic for them. But I think everybody sees through it.
That's conservative media, too, because the first conservative media outlet to sort of circle around him was Breitbart. And they said of all the allegations, the only one that would be illegal would be molesting a 14-year-old. You saw on Fox News, he had a lot of defenders. So this is going to test two things. One, sort of the depths and depravity of conservative media outlets that defend someone like Roy Moore, who is now known to be a pedophile, unless you don't believe the women who 30 years later put their names on a story that has to be reliving some of their worst moments. And two, it's going to test whether or not this toxic slogan of fake media has made people has made people immune to facts.
I would have a question that I would like to pose for all the good people, the enormous numbers of good people in Alabama, in Dothan, Alabama, Birmingham, Alabama. If a 32-year-old man came in your driveway to pick up your 14-year-old daughter, what would your reaction be?
They would shoot them. And to see in the minutes after the story broke, conservative media spokespeople get on TV and say, well, the only legal problem he has is the 14-year-old. You know, no, the problem he has is he's an animal. He's an animal, and Republicans are waiting to see if it's true.
I anticipated a fake news attack. I anticipated deny, 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 Washington Post's fake news. What I did not anticipate was watching a bunch of conservatives today bend over backwards to defend molesting a child, and yet somehow that's apparently where we are.
You guys remember Roy Moore? This guy who's constantly posturing about how devout he is and how sinful everyone else is? Well, spoiler alert, in a bombshell report in the Washington Post today, a woman says Roy Moore initiated a sexual encounter with her when she was 14 and he was 32. For those keeping track, that is an age difference of it doesn't matter, she was 14. That is an act so heinous that it defies my ability to describe it. But I'll try. Illegal. Besides Besides the 14-year-old girl, the Post talked to three other women who say Moore pursued them when they were between the ages of 16 and 18, and he was in his early 30s. My God, these accusations are so damning, voters are either going to force him off the ballot or make him president.
But it's interesting. The Bezos, Amazon, Washington Post that dropped that dime on Donald Trump is the same Bezos, Amazon, Washington Post that dropped the dime this afternoon on Judge Roy Moore. Now, is that a coincidence? That's what I mean when I say opposition party, right? It's purely part of the apparatus of the Democratic Party. They don't make any bones about it.
All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941. Sean is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. News Roundup, information overload. All right, so we have this interview we just had with Judge Roy Moore, and he denies every allegation. If you notice how I did the interview, I went through the article line by line by line. And then I asked very specific questions. Would this be wrong? Would this be wrong? Would this be wrong? What do you think? Would this disqualify somebody for the Senate? I agree. If somebody did this, totally disqualifying, because that person would then be a predator. If you're 32 years old and you're going after a 14-year-old, that's predator illegal behavior. Anyway, joining us now with analysis, Mercedes Cohen. She's a legal analyst for the Fox News Channel, partner of the firm, Gordon Reese, and former sex crimes litigator. She has literally done hundreds of these types of cases in corporate America. D.C. McAllister's with Federalist and PJ Media. Let me first get your reaction to Roy Moore, Mercedes. We went through every single solitary thing. He denied everything. He denied it adamantly. We've seen this happen on the verge of elections before. How do you interpret this? Well, how are people to think?
Sean, great question. There's two sides to every story. The only ones that know really what took place are the individuals that are involved. I mean, that's why when you're dealing with a criminal case, there is a vetting process. Who are the witnesses? Was there anything in writing? Was there any documentation? Is there anything that establishes that took place? Who did these women who accused him of wrongful conduct, who did they speak to? Did they speak to anybody contemporaneously? If it's a civil case, it goes through an even more exhaustive vetting process, because then you have questions that are posed to the other side. You have depositions. You have cross-examinations, all of that. And ultimately, you go through this process because we have a due process, whether it's in the criminal setting or in the civil setting. There's still two sides to the story. There's still this process of due diligence. And ultimately, who's telling the truth? It's really up to, if you go to trial, it's up to the jury.
What do you think, D.C. McAllister?
My concern here is the automatic rush to calling him guilty. And we do have innocence before proven guilty in this nation. And I know that that's only in the court of law, but it also should be in the realm of public opinion. We're firing up our torches and going after people without the process going through, without the investigations, without, like Mercedes says, getting both sides, looking into it in detail before rushing in and calling like these clips you had. You know, he's a monster. He's a predator. He's a pedophile. No, we don't know that. We don't know that. If he is, like you said, Sean, yes, then he needs to be held to account politically. The statute of limitations has run out on this, but still politically he should pay for that. But we do not know this. The process has not gone forward, and I'm concerned. We've seen this before. We saw it with Clarence Thomas. We saw it with Donald Trump. But we've seen it before, last-minute accusations.
Oh, we've seen it with Herman Cain.
Exactly.
You know, and by the way, you know, even Bill Clinton. And the difference is I actually took the time to interview the women. They don't even do any research, and they rush to judgment.
Exactly. And just the timing itself should cause us to pause and ask more questions, because it is important to protect victims, but it's also important to protect those who've been accused. Our value for determining guilt and presuming innocence is a higher value than the passions of the plaintiff. And we need to remember that.
Let me ask this question.
Passions of the plaintiff, we're putting vengeance, we're putting fear, we're putting whatever is the motivating factors here that could not be, might or might not be true. We're putting that first, before we are putting the value of having to prove this being true. And if we go in and we just shred innocence and we say you're guilty no matter what just because of the seriousness of the allegations, then we're not living in a civil society. why even have people run for office? Why even stand for truth? Why even stand for victims? Because we don't stand for anything legal and we don't stand for anything civil.
You see, everybody does deserve the presumption. I brought up a lot of cases where, I always highlight the media never vetted Obama. The media never thought Trump could win. The media rushed to judgment on the Duke lacrosse kids. The media rushed to judgment on Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. The media rushed to judgment in Freddie Gray in Baltimore. Those cops were all found innocent. The same with Darren Wilson. Hands up, don't shoot. Ferguson. Cambridge police. You know, these are high-profile cases. Nobody waits for any facts to come in. And as I laid out it in my opening monologue last night, I learned a valuable lesson in Atlanta, Mercedes. And that was, wow, Richard Jewell happened to be listening to my show. It happened to be the day the Atlanta Journal-Constitution said he fit the profile of a lone bomber because he lives with his mother. It turned out he was not the bomber. He turned out he was a hero. And as a result, he came on my show, one of the first interviews he did, because he was listening and he said, I was the only guy that gave him a fair shot.
I mean, it's so true, Sean, because ultimately it's a balancing of rights between the accused and the accuser. The accused have what the accusation, but the accuser have to have their due process, whether it's in a criminal setting or in a civil setting. It's not due process, but the due diligence and to conclude whether or not what those allegations are truthful.
Yeah, all right, stay right there. We'll come back. We'll continue more with Mercedes Cohen and more with D.C. McAllister. And we'll have my interview with Roy Moore tonight on Hannity, 9 Eastern, Fox News Channel.
So wait. I'm a little lost. So the internet said Louis harassed women.
So there was first a Gawker article, and then there was a couple of tweets by people. And I know this is all internet stuff.
Pretty authoritative.
I know that this is how.
You know who you're talking to, right?
No, I totally get that, and it's a fair point that like internet rumors are not, court cases or anything. I just wanted to know if there was any sort of discussion about that on the show, if that was a thing on your radar.
No, I didn't see the tweets.
No, but, or Jen Kirkman's podcast about.
I apologize. I honestly, like, I'm not that connected to that world, so I do apologize. I don't know what you're talking about, but.
I can't really say. And I can turn that around, and I think that's a good point, is that a lot of people at the time didn't know what that was.
All I can tell you is I've worked with Louis for 30 years, and, like, he's a wonderful man and person, and I've never heard anything about this. And we've all known Bill Cosby was a for a long time, so I don't know what to tell you. But I didn't know about the sexual assault. But you're right; it's important.
Not
to,
sexual assault,
whatever,
harassment in general.
Appreciate your question. Thank you.
The 70s were very different. In the 70s, there was a child molester that lived in my hometown, and it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't like we caught a child molester. It was just like, yeah, that's the house where the child molester lives. He lives where. Hey, kids, don't be stupid, or you'll get molested. Just stay away from the child molester house. I know because he did something to me when I was your age. So just stay away from the child molester house. We really did. We had a town child molester. His name was Jean Baptiste. It's a true story. He liked teenage boys. That's when you would find out, because I was a teenage boy. He didn't like me. I felt a little bad. Like, no, not you. He wasn't into me. But he would drive up next to teenage boys, and he'd say, hello, would you like to go to McDonald's? And you're like, no. And he's like, what, you don't like McDonald's? And then you're trapped, because of course everybody liked McDonald's. It was the 70s. And then I had one friend who used to get in the car. He'd be like, sure, I'll go. And he'd get in the car. He'd go to McDonald's and eat a burger. And then he'd say, see ya. And he'd just take off. And Jean-Baptiste was like, duh, I cannot get sex with that child. And he'd spoil it again. But he'd always try. Maybe this time. Because child molesters are very tenacious people. They love molesting childs. It's crazy. It's like their favorite thing. I mean, it's so crazy because when you consider the risk in being a child molester, speaking not of even the damage you're doing, but the risk, there is no worse life available to a human than being a caught child molester. And yet they still do it, which from you can only really surmise that it must be really good. I mean, from there.
I don't get, you know, what Louis C.K. is admitting here. By doing this in front of innocent people, there's something, I guess, he owned up to it, but do you know what I'm saying? I don't understand. That's like such an illness. at such a high level. Why would people do that? I don't understand, you know, how people can be that sick because, and that disgusting and, frankly, that abusive to innocent people. What gives you the right to do something like that?
No, I think you make a really good point, and I think that's something you've always been so strong on, Sean, is talking about the victims first and putting their feelings and their thoughts first and trying to figure out where the truth lies and going wherever that truth may lead us. And in Louis C.K.'s, case, he came forward today and said that it was true. And I hope that more people are able to come forward and talk about what really happened. And I hope that we get to the truth.
But there really is something I've always said. There's evil in this world, and there are predators in this world, and there are dark people in this world. And, you know, and then when allegations are made, you know, to come under fire, in my case, for saying, I want to know the truth, and I don't know the truth yet, and I'm being honest, and sometimes people don't say true things. I'm just trying to get to the truth. And I don't think anybody that acts like that or what Roy Moore is being accused of should be in the Senate. He admitted the same to me. And he didn't think anybody that did something like that at 32 to a 14-year-old girl belongs in the Senate. All right, got to take a quick break here. 800-941-SHAWN. Special Facebook Live when we come back. And just go to my Facebook page and you'll find out what it's all about. That's next. All right, happy Friday, 25 till the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. All right, so there has been some stuff. We got to do a little cleaning house here on the Sean Hannity Show because one of the things I don't like is I am usually the last to know. Hey, can you tell Sunshine to pay attention here?
Sunshine.
I'm so sorry. I'm doing my job.
Okay, doing your job. Now, what bothers me is I am the boss around here. I know Linda acts like she's the boss.
I am the boss.
And when anybody gets in trouble, they all say the same thing. She'll jump in and say, no, that's my fault. Meanwhile, it has nothing to do with her and her life or her duties and job, whatever. But I did find out recently that apparently there's been something going on that I didn't know about. And that is that Linda has a brother whose name is Donnie. You like to be called Donnie?
Just Don's
Who's
fine.
Calling you Donnie?
Oh, sorry. Don. So you're named after the president, of course. Anyway, behind everybody's back, Don, Linda's brother, younger brother?
Yes.
Has been dating Sunshine Lauren.
Breaking news now.
And I'm the last to find out about it, which annoys me.
No, you weren't.
Yes, I was. Yes, I'm always the last to find out.
I was the last to find out about it.
Oh, but, well, maybe. That's true. I think I knew one day before you. Now, this is what bothers me. How long have you been dating, Don?
3 months.
3 months?
3 months.
And what are your intentions for Sunshine Lauren?
She's a really great girl. I mean, things have been going really well. I hope we continue to see each other after this.
After this? All right. But you know she's like family to us.
I do.
And there are really high standards on the Sean Hannity Show family. Now, this is where it gets a little tough for you. I hear you're both going to Hawaii.
Yes, we are.
Over Christmas?
Yes, Christmas Eve we leave.
Uh-huh. And how long are you going to be there?
2 weeks.
And you have separate rooms?
Did we get separate rooms?
Separate rooms everywhere.
Separate rooms. Oh, you're staying in a lot of different places.
They're not even on the same flight. They're on different flights.
We didn't want to be too close.
Different car service.
All right, so I tell you what, Sunshine, come in here for 1 second. Just come on in because I think this is important. Because we're going to have rules that we're going to set up for Hawaii, so this way we'll know. What is stupid camera in our face all day? I get it. What is he doing? And so I want to just set up rules for the trip. Go ahead, sit down. No, you can sit down right here. Do we have a mic for her? Okay, yeah, you take that one. You're looking at me with daggers. Why am I getting daggers?
This is the look of love.
That's the look. No, you're mad. No, the problem is you've been hanging out with Linda too long. Linda gave up her hate list, and you took it on. All right, so you've been dating 3 months.
Three long months.
Don't you think it's a little early to go to Hawaii as a couple?
She really pushed for it.
Oh, it was her fault.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, I'm very pushy. I needed a tropical getaway.
Why'd you pick Hawaii?
My cousin lives there.
Oh, so you're going to, and he's in the military, right?
Yeah, he's a Marine.
Oh, so you're really going to see your cousin and have a little bit of a vacation. You do deserve a vacation. You work
Correct.
Really hard. Yeah. Okay, so the question is why would you be worthy to go with her after only 3 months to Hawaii, and why should I trust you?
You know, I don't know. I mean, basically just based on my sister. I guess if she's a good person, I guess.
No, your sister's a great person. But, right. But you're not your sister. You're your own individual
That's
self.
True. That's true. I could be a terrible person.
So what attracted you to Lauren, and how do we know you're going to treat her the right way? Because sometimes men are not nice.
This is called dead air.
No, this is not called dead air. What attracted you to Lauren?
Well, she's very attractive.
Okay. All right, so how did you... So wait a minute. So you guys are all hanging out because of Linda, and then one day you say, oh, I think I want to date her behind my sister's back and behind her boss's back? What is that?
Yeah, I mean, she wanted to keep it under wraps because she knew that this would happen.
So. Is that true? You knew that I would talk about it? I gave you a pass for a month and a half now. I have not brought this up.
Very generous of you.
No, but I just want to know why we should trust you to take her to Hawaii. Why should we trust you? Why should we believe in you?
I think overall I'm just generally a good person, so.
Overall you're a good person?
Yeah.
Now, do you make a good living? What do you do for work?
I'm a VP of a big events, like production company, so.
Really?
Yeah.
So, like, if we do another big Hannity event, you can be our guy.
We could, yeah.
We should always be your guy.
What are the qualities about Lauren that you like the most? I'm trying to see how compatible you guys are.
Well, at first, she's very beautiful. She's extremely smart.
Mm-hmm.
She's compassionate, loves dogs, so do I.
Oh, no. Loves dogs isn't the word.
Yeah, that's true.
Did you hear what happened when Treat failed and went out to get trained?
I've heard.
Choke chain the poor dog?
I've heard all the stories.
She was crying for days.
She's very successful, and she's not being choke chained.
She has to be choke chained because that dog wouldn't listen to anybody.
No.
You trained that dog for months, and that dog didn't go. All right, what else do you like about her?
Oh,
He doesn't even know. Words escape him right now.
Wow. Everything. I mean, there's just so much.
You're definitely not in sales, are you? You're not in the sales business.
I feel like I'm being put on the spot here.
Your face is so beat red. I wish we had.
Good look on you.
What is that? You look like a tomato. You're so nervous. All right, why do you like him? Why did you say yes? And why did you sneak behind our back with Linda?
Well, first of all,
Festival.
If I may steal a line.
First of all.
Yeah. It wasn't so much, you know, at the time there was a lot going on and, you know, Linda had some stuff she was dealing with and we didn't want to, you know, be like, oh, look at us. Everything's great. You know, we wanted to kind of play it cool, see where things went because it's a weird dynamic if something goes wrong.
So you literally snuck behind your sister's back dating her coworker and one of her best friends and you didn't tell your sister?
Well, not for a while.
How long is not for a while?
I don't know. When did we tell her? When did we tell you, Lynn? I don't remember.
I think the better part is not when, but how they told me. So these two knuckleheads, you know, I keep trying to get them to do something, yada, yada. And then one night I'm home and I get a phone call, a FaceTime.
Oh, the FaceTime.
And I was like, and I'm about to be like, you know, you need to get on this with Lauren, you know, da, 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 this and that. And what do you know? Who appears in the video? She's like, hi. And I'm like, oh! I'm like, you guys are doing this behind my back?
I know.
No one's telling me?
Because my sister told me that I should date her. She's the one that pushed for it.
Oh, shocking. So. Why am I shocked Linda's involved? She doesn't involve
I don't
herself
know what that's supposed to mean, but I'm going to take it as a compliment.
Listen, I'm a
catch, and she knows it.
Well, that I agree
exactly.
with. That's why I'm trying
and
to...
And Don's a catch, and she knows it. So she's like, two catches need to become
all right,
one
so you
catch.
Got, I'm going to make a prediction, and I may be going out on a limb here. I'm predicting... I told her, you're going to be how many days in Hawaii?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. All right, on day, you're not going to do it the first day. You're not going to do it the third day. You're going to do it on day 10.
Sean, you're blowing up my spot here.
You're cruel. Why would you want to do this to him?
I'm not
what
cruel.
What if we're not getting married? What if that's not the way we want to live our lives?
What does that mean?
Oh, okay. Sorry, Lauren. Cats out of that bag.
Well, exactly. She mentioned being polyamorous. Or...
Yeah. I don't know.
Polyamorous? Seriously?
This is the different show, Don. Different show.
Howard Stern
Sean.
Is on SiriusXM. You can find Howard there. By the way, if you're thinking of running for president, that's not the show you want to do either. So I predict on day 10.
Day 10?
Have you thought about getting married, asking her hand in marriage?
We have discussed it, yes.
And how did it go?
I think she's interested.
If he asked you, right this second, I want to marry you, what would you say?
I'd be like, let me get back to you.
Oh!
Oh! Cold.
No.
Burn.
No. No, listen, you asked me earlier and I never got to answer what attracts me to Don. And among many things, obviously, I find him very attractive. He is.
He's not my type.
Probably got one of the most beautiful hearts. He's got a great spirit. He's got great energy. And we have common values and we kind of have a common goals for the future. So
what are the common values?
And
what
we
do
laugh
you share?
A lot,
yeah.
Which is important.
Well, why do you scowl at me all day when I'm doing my radio show? You don't show me any of that laughter. You just get annoyed. You and
she's,
her.
She's saving it up for Don, you know? It's like she can't be nice all day.
I can't give it up all day.
So you're going to Hawaii. Do you think you're going to get engaged? Are you expecting that?
You know, I like to be surprised. Mm. So, you know, if it happens, great. If not,
you're cool with
life
it.
Life goes on.
Is there any ring specifications like you want? Like every girl wants at least 2 carats in this particular shape.
Well, I know she said she wanted a big rock because.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't really wear jewelry. I don't know if you noticed, but she
you
said.
Wear any, you, so
no.
You won't even wear an engagement ring?
I usually just wear a little cross and that's it.
Oh, okay. So you won't wear any.
So, I mean, I'm going to have to get used to it, but I always thought it would be nice to be like, bam, this is my ring, and it's big.
And oh, in other words.
Because I'm not going to wear anything else.
Yeah.
So
what day are you planning on doing it? You might as well tell us all now. Day 10. I'm predicting day 10.
Actually, it's today.
What? Today?
Are you guys serious?
Look.
Oh,
wow.
My God.
And Don gets down on one knee. Wait, get the microphone.
No. Hang
on. Put the microphone down there. All right. On
oh,
one knee.
No.
Here oh, by the way, before you do it, there's some people in there. Oh, look. Oh, there are other people in there. Look at all. There's grandma and mom and dad and
gosh.
Linda's mom. Guess what? It may actually be real. I don't know. His face is very red. All right. When you talk into the mic.
All right. I'm talking into the mic.
Yeah, no, look at me. Talk to me. Okay. Ignore him.
Ignore him.
Babe, I know it's only been 3 months, but you know I've fallen madly in love with you, and we've discussed this many times over, and I thought this would be the biggest surprise because I didn't think you would expect it.
Oh, yes.
So, no, will you marry me?
Yes.
Oh, they're kissing in the studio. No tongue. All right, stop. Oh, look at this. Congratulations.
We're loving you.
Yeah.
Put that music up.
Baby,
did you put the ring on?
Did you see the ring? Do you know what that ring is?
23.
You know what that ring is? Your grandmother's ring.
People fall in love in mysterious
ways. Oh, this is beautiful.
Maybe
they're all crying in there. Why are you crying? Oh, man. A beautiful moment.
We fall in love with you every single day.
Sorry. All right.
Sorry.
Now, when you go to Hawaii, can I perform the ceremony?
Yeah.
Where are you going to get married?
I don't know.
Were you surprised?
Come here, Linda. Wait, hold on. Linda wants to come
Linda's
in.
Linda's crying. Oh, good. Look at this. This is amazing. Did you have any idea we were doing this today?
No.
Not even when I brought you in here?
Well, then it got a little suspicious.
And then, but you didn't think that I'm talking about Hawaii all week.
Yeah, you jerk. Did you really know?
Of course we all knew. Everybody knew.
Oh, my God. I was like, wow, you're really rude. Like, that's so mean.
Well, wait a minute. Why do you think that your parents and grandma are in there and Linda's mom is in there? They're not there for no reason.
I just turned around and they were there.
So you think this all happened by accident? You are now going to be a McLaughlin. This is how Linda rolls. Linda McLaughlin.
McLaughlins are great.
Linda McLaughlin controls every single aspect.
You're welcome.
Listen, she will tell you when it's time to have a baby. She will tell you when it's time to change the baby. She's going to be dictating your entire life now.
No, she has her own McLaughlin. I'm going to step aside.
You look in a state of complete shock.
I am. Wow. Yes.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. I just wasn't expecting any of this with the camera.
So we told Lauren we're Facebook living the radio show today, which I would never do ever. And she bought into been in here the whole time.
Wow,
it's all on a recording.
So sneaky.
Can I perform the ceremony? And we could do it at my house. and you can do the thing that Cassie did.
You can perform the... No, no.
What do you mean, no?
You can definitely perform the ceremony.
I can.
But it's got to be, you know, let's go... I want to go somewhere.
Are you going to drag me in New Jersey to do this?
No.
I didn't go to Linda's wedding. I said to Linda, Linda, I'll pay you money or I'll go to the wedding. What do you want?
She goes, you're such a romantic.
All right, guys, we love you. We're
love
proud
you.
Of you both.
Thank you, Sean.
And very nice to meet
you. Appreciate it.
And take good care of her.
I will do. We're
counting on you.
Kiss me under the light of a thousand stars. Place your head on my beating heart.
All right, Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern, on the Fox News Channel. My interview with Roy Moore and so much more. And we'll have all sides of this debate and whether or not politics is being played here. Set your DVR, Hannity. Yes, I'm live tonight. Of course I'm live tonight. I'm live every night, 9 Eastern. Listen, for all our vets out there, tomorrow's Veterans Day. Take a moment and thank God for these men and women fought, some all willing to risk their lives for us, for their country. And how many have fought, bled, and died for their country? We love you all. We appreciate the gift of freedom that you have given all of us. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Back here, well, we'll be at Hannity tonight at 9. Then we'll be back here on Monday. Have a great weekend. We'll see you then.